When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The U.S. is warning a Russian invasion of Ukraine could be imminent, what that means for Americans in the country. Plus, cities and states are rolling back COVID-19 restrictions. Is this the right time, or is it too soon?
There's a bit of daylight between what some state and local officials are doing and what the CDC advises right now that just reflects a sort of balance of the health ramifications with the political reality on the ground.
Plus, crypto is mounting an offensive at this year's Super Bowl. It's Friday, February 11th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. At a White House briefing today, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the U.S. believes Russian President Vladimir Putin could order an invasion of Ukraine at any time, even before the end of the Beijing Olympics on February 20th. Sullivan declined to comment on specific intelligence assessments and said the U.S. didn't know whether Putin had decided either way. Sullivan urged Americans in Ukraine to leave the country as soon as possible.
I'm not standing here and saying what is going to happen or not happen. I'm only standing here to say that the risk is now high enough and the threat is immediate enough that prudence demands that it is the time to leave now. While commercial options and commercial rail and air service exist, while the roads are open.
Daniel Nassau, an editor on our national security team, says messaging over a possible invasion has become more urgent.
What struck me was his warning that Americans really need to get out. 24 to 48 hours, he said. He warned that there might be no advance notice. The warning could come in the form of airstrikes on cities. And he said that could stop rail travel and air travel, and you're not going to be able to get out. And the U.S. is not planning on sending the military in to rescue you.
Russia has amassed more than 100,000 troops along the Ukrainian border, but has denied it intends to invade the country. The warnings that Russia could soon invade Ukraine and concerns over the latest inflation data dragged markets down today. The Dow fell around 500 points. All three indexes ended the turbulent week at a loss. The Dow by 1%, the S&P 500 by 1.8%, and the Nasdaq by 2.2%. TikTok has said it's taking additional steps to promote what it calls the safety, security, and well-being of its users. The video platform is updating its community guidelines to explicitly ban misogyny, misgendering, and dead naming on its app. That's using the birth name of a transgender person who has changed their name. TikTok has said that the changes will be implemented over the coming weeks. The Food and Drug Administration says it needs more time to review Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine for use in children under 5. The agency said it wants to include additional data from an ongoing study it received from the drug makers, which looks at the impact of giving kids in that age group a third dose. The new move will delay the rollout of the shot for children younger than 5, which is the last age group without access to vaccination. A Canadian judge is granting police permission to forcibly remove protesters who have blocked access to the Ambassador Bridge connecting Detroit to Windsor, Ontario. The Chief Justice of Ontario's Superior Court said the injunction would take effect tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, giving protesters an opportunity to clear the area. The City of Windsor and representatives for the auto industry applied for the court order. The bridge accommodates roughly 30% of annual trade between the U.S. and Canada, recently pegged at over $600 billion. Most car makers in North America have had to curtail production because parts required for assembly couldn't be delivered due to the protests. The protesters vowed to stay until Canada drops all COVID-19 mandates. Cities and states here in the U.S. have been rolling back some COVID-19 restrictions. Coming up, how officials are making those calls.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
The number of new COVID-19 cases fell to about 202,000 on Wednesday, down from more than 860,000 4 weeks ago, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More than 20 states, including New York and California, have seen their average daily case counts fall more than 80% from recent peaks, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis. As those numbers fall and vaccination rates continue to climb, many cities and states have started rolling back their COVID-19 restrictions. But how are officials determining when it's safe to ease restrictions? And how are they balancing COVID-19 fatigue with guarding against another potential surge of the virus? Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal Health and Medicine Bureau Chief Patrick McRorty. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Emery. Thanks for having me.
So let's start broadly. This is really a tough balancing act for local officials. How are experts looking at this, and what guidance do they have for areas now looking to ease restrictions?
It is a tough balancing act. The CDC continues to recommend that people wear masks in most indoor situations in places where transmission of COVID-19 is high, which still applies to a great deal of the country. So even where that is the case, lots of local officials are deciding that with Omicron cases of COVID-19 so drastically in retreat, they can make the call that some of those restrictions are no longer necessary because spread has sort of diminished so much. So there's a bit of daylight between what some state and local officials are doing and what the CDC advises right now that just reflects a sort of balance of the health ramifications with the political reality on the ground and the fact that people can see that cases have dropped so significantly.
What can you tell us, Patrick, about how the Omicron surge is impacting different parts of the country right now? We know from an analysis that a little under half of states have seen case counts plummet. What about the rest of the country?
Omicron continues to be, you know, a pervasive presence in the United States right now. Cases have fallen precipitously nationwide and particularly in places where the variant had a foothold first. So on the East Coast, on the West Coast, California, New York are some of those places. In the middle of the country, cases remain higher. And you have the added issue there of not only is the variant still circulating at a higher level, but vaccination rates there also, you know, tend to be lower, which creates a higher risk for those populations than you might find in communities where Omicron peaked earlier and where more people are vaccinated.
Patrick, this is a stat that really caught my eye. The CDC says more than 99% of U.S. counties still have high enough levels of virus transmission that make the case for continued masking indoors and in public spaces. Can you parse that out for us and tell us how local leaders are making decisions around that guidance?
Yeah, it's complicated, and there's a lot of discussion right now among officials at the CDC, officials of the White House, and public health experts over exactly how people should be apprising the risk of Omicron, as you say, which remains a pervasive presence, but which also leads to less serious disease in a lot of cases. You know, the CDC is saying that transmission of the virus is high enough that masks make a lot of sense for reasons including the protection of people who are at higher risk from the virus, the immunocompromised, elderly people, etc. Other officials in the government, including, you know, Dr. Fauci, have said that hospitalization is in some ways a better gauge for sort of where we're at in the pandemic at the moment, for reasons including that Omicron is less of a risk to many people who become infected with it. So that's why you're seeing a bit of a gap between the CDC's guidance, which uses metrics that they used earlier in the pandemic, you know, when variants were spreading that were a little less virulent, like Delta, for instance, and some federal and local officials who are now saying, well, you know what, it seems like Omicron is less of a threat sort of from a high level. So we're going to take a more permissive stance to pandemic rules than we might have taken 6 months ago if there were this many transmissions happening in our community at that time.
Schools are presenting something of a unique challenge here. How are local leaders navigating that and the different positions around whether we should have masking in schools?
There are certainly some extra factors at play in schools when officials think through whether students and teachers and people in those spaces should be wearing masks. I mean, some of the same thinking applies. Omicron was, you know, pervasive a month or two ago. It's really fallen back, particularly where it was prevalent at first, New York, California, et cetera. So that's one reason that officials in some of those places are starting to remove mask mandates that they may have reinstated toward the end of the year. And another factor you have is that the very youngest children, you know, those under five, are still not eligible for vaccines. So you have this group of people for whom, even if Omicron is not spreading among them and elsewhere in the school building at this point, they may be more vulnerable to the virus and may be more effective spreaders of the virus than some of their, you know, peers elsewhere in school. So it's just a really complicated situation that's creating, yeah, a lot of tough questions for school administrators and local officials for sure.
Patrick, what about U.S. hospitals? What can you tell us about the situation there?
I think the situation differs quite a bit in different parts of the country. Cases are down dramatically. Hospitalization rates remain pretty high, although they're headed in the right direction. But there's pretty big variability between places like New York, places like California, where vaccination rates are high and the variant was very prevalent earlier, and pockets in the middle of the country where, you know, Omicron arrived a bit later and fewer people are vaccinated. In some of those places, you're definitely still seeing hospitals under great strain from the variant. And that is the indicator that, you know, some officials are saying we should really be watching perhaps most closely in deciding when and how to step back from the protections we've added during the Omicron surge is, you know, what strain there is on our hospitals.
We've now been through several surges in the country. Are we better prepared to handle the next one?
That is a great question and a somewhat unanswerable one. I mean, certainly with every wave, with every month that goes by, the nation learns a lot about how to handle this virus, and vaccination rates, you know, move up a little bit. The access to tests, the amount of, you know, tests and masks that are available in the country increases. But that is one big reason that some public health experts are warning against us lowering too many restrictions too fast, precisely because they say we should be using a moment of sort of cooling in the pandemic or any, you know, lull that may be coming up as Omicron dissipates to better prepare for a future in which COVID-19 is not going away and the threat of, you know, new outbreaks and new variants is going to be with us, at least for the foreseeable future.
That's Wall Street Journal Health and Medicine Bureau Chief Patrick McRorty. Patrick, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, Super Bowl Sunday is coming up, and even non-sports fans might be watching for the ads. Brands bet big on the game. A 30-second commercial is going for around $7 million this year, up from $5.5 million in 2021. Viewers will see familiar brands like Pepsi, Anheuser-Busch, Kia, and TurboTax. But this year, cryptocurrency platforms such as Coinbase, FTX, and Crypto.com will also be in the field. Here's our cryptocurrency reporter, Paul Vigna.
This moment with these companies buying ads in the Super Bowl sort of caps off what has been a long run-up for the cryptocurrency sector in terms of its mainstream recognition and acceptance. And now what you are going to see probably with these ads is that this is a real sort of unveiling moment for this entire sector.
Wall Street Journal advertising editor Suzanne Vernitza says that this big play could land crypto a touchdown.
The good news is that unlike most television advertising and the ratings have gone down over the years, Super Bowl remains one of the quintessential ways to sort of position a brand and get it well known really quickly just because of the reach.
Super Bowl 56 airs this Sunday on NBC. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trine Nori and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Jenny Ang, Kateri Yoakum, Sandra Kilhoff, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.